Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And we're back. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. A lot of folks are doing that. AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency, connecting people with employment. Busy, busy, busy. And they're celebrating 50 years. You can find more at ulagency.org, ulagency.org. Celebrating almost 60 years, let's go to line number one right now, is the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. I mentioned just a couple of minutes ago that they were established on June 1st, 1961. And Dorsey Hager, one of our regulars, joining us right now. ColumbusConstruction.org is a website, Twitter handle, BuildCentralOH. And there's a lot of building going in Central OH, no doubt about that. Hey, Dorsey, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Doing great. How are you doing on this Friday afternoon?
Not bad. My Indians are in first place. Your Reds seem to be struggling a little bit, but you know what? It's still pretty much early in the season. And I'll tell you, I'll be honest, a lot of people didn't think the Indians were going to do anything this year, especially when Lindor left. And hey, have you followed Lindor at the in the Mets? I guess he's not doing too well, is he?
I have been following him. I saw that he's 0 for his last 21, so the fans in New York have not shown him a lot of love the last 7 or 8 days. No.
You know, eventually that's going to turn around. But hey, that's what happens a lot of times when they leave the team. It takes a while for them to adjust. Dorsey, I know there's a lot we want to cover on the show today. I just ran down some numbers on the annual report that the Labor Federation comes out. It's called The Toll of Neglect, Death on the Job. And as you know, construction, dangerous job, and that's why you have so many worker safety programs in it. But there's one part that I just wanted to touch base with you on, and it's right to work. And you know, the lawmakers in Ohio, especially in the southern part, are always pushing right to work. It's got to go right to work. They attack prevailing wage. You know that. You're in the middle of it all the time. But what this report pointed out, that right-to-work states had higher death rates for workers. Three of the five worst higher death rates. I mean, we're talking Wyoming, North Dakota, West Virginia, Florida, Mississippi, Nebraska. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I mean, I think there's like 27 states in the country now that are right-to-work. And I was just figuring you might want to address that. And maybe this should come up the next time these lawmakers want to push Ohio right to work. Where are we with that right now, Dorsey?
I think the right to work conversation has settled down here in Ohio. I mean, you have groups that are pushing it. You have some, you have your Tom Brinkmans in Southern Ohio. You have your Christina Regners in the Senate that are pushing, but it doesn't seem like to be a big appetite for right to work in the Ohio House or in the Senate right now. We're fortunate with our speaker, Bob Cupp. He's been looking at other legislation. He's been incredibly labor friendly. So the things like doing away with prevailing wage, passing right to work have not came up, which is good. I think we have a pretty good relationship with a lot of members in the Senate as well, like Stephanie Coonsey, Jay Hottinger, Bob Peterson. So that hasn't been an issue in the Senate either. So we haven't heard a lot about right to work. But the study that you're talking about, I saw, and it's no surprise that right to work states lead the country in workplace injuries and also workplace fatalities. Because we've discussed this on the show, when you have right to work states and it's a race to the bottom for everybody, union and non union contractors, corners are cut to be more competitive. The workers are the ones who suffer in wages, salaries, and benefits. And one of the first things to go out the window is not only health care and pension, but also apprenticeship training, workforce development training, and safety training. We're in the middle of one of our cohorts for Building Futures right now, and one of the first things we do before we teach them, anything about hand tools or climbing a ladder or anything like that or lifts, they go through OSHA training and they get their OSHA certification, because we want them to not only know how to work safe, but to be aware of any dangers that may be around them and how to address them and wear the proper PPE so that those things don't happen. So I think it's very, very important that we continue to keep this narrative whenever we're discussing right to work, prevailing wage, any of these things. And I know we were talking offline about this report, and we were talking about some of the things that are going on in the House and Senate. You know, so we keep an eye on a lot of these bills. We try to head them off before they get really legs underneath them. But we've been fortunate the last couple of years with the relationships that we've built on both sides of the aisle in the House and Senate to try to stop a lot of this legislation. Where I think we need to do a better job, and it's tough with people and personnel and resources, where I think we need to do a better job is we need to get into the areas where some of these things come out, and we need to educate the younger legislators, you know, when they're on school board, when they're township trustees, when they're city council people, to let them know why these issues aren't good for themselves, aren't good for the state, and aren't good for their community. You know, a few years ago, we had a friend of the building trades who was defeated in a local election. His name was Clarence Mingo. And, you know, I got the chance to really get to know him, be friends with him. He's working in state government now. And it's like he told me, he's like, when I was coming up, the Republican playbook was unions are pro-Democrat. We have to hate unions and everything they stand for, and we have to do away with unions. And that's what they were taught, but they were never taught the reason why. So then when he came into our training centers, he saw the money that we invested, not only in our own people, but also within the community, to give the economically disadvantaged a chance to get free training, get into our apprenticeship programs, and get onto that direct path to the middle class. He reconsidered that playbook and was thinking, what are we doing? These people and these labor unions are assets to our community, and they're helping to provide, you know, a good paying job and a good career and for a lot of people here in our community. And we got to keep them around, and we got to keep them strong and healthy.
So you pulled a 180 on this guy. He's anti-union, and then you turned him around. That's good. And you know what? With that being said, you have to understand something. You know this, and we've talked about this on the show. Much of that anti-union rhetoric is coming from out of state. It's a national campaign. There's a group called Americans for Prosperity. It's the Koch brothers. There's the Heritage Foundation. These are right-wing think tanks. And they design legislation. I know Americans for Prosperity, they design legislation like right to work. And they get to those lawmakers and they say exactly what you just told our listeners. Unions are bad. You don't want unions. You don't need them. You're just going to pay a bunch of union dues.
And I think that's the narrative that we have to combat in the business community, too. And also with a lot of these right wing think tanks, like you said, the Buckeye Institute, ALEC and them. They go out and they tell area chambers of commerce and they tell local electeds that, you know, you're not going to be able to compete for a lot of these projects and a lot of these companies because Ohio is considered a labor-friendly or union-friendly state. And that's absolutely not true. I think 10, 15 years ago, I think that was at the top of the list, right to work. Now it's at the very bottom. When I meet with a Facebook, when I meet with a Google, when I meet with an Amazon, when I meet with any of those people, their first question is, you know, do you have the people to build what I need built? And after I get it built, do you have the people to maintain and to work in what I have built? And that's their biggest question. You know, some of the struggles that they have with Ohio that are not our struggles, the struggles that elected officials and I think people in the legislature need to address, and you and I talk about it all the time, is infrastructure. And it's not just roads and bridges. It's, you know, it's the digital divide. It's having internet accessible and free for everybody, so that way everybody in the state can achieve a good education and get into that where they're employable and they can go to work for these companies. But right to work is way down the list. Like I said, the highest is infrastructure, and then, you know, you get some things in there like affordable housing and things like that. I know I have friends that own businesses, and their concern is affordable housing because they want to be able to have employees that live near their business to work in their business, and affordable housing is an issue.
When you talk about infrastructure, what comes to mind is Biden's American Jobs Plan, which was announced at the end of March. Can you give us a flavor of what people are saying in Central Ohio about that? Are they beginning to embrace it? Because I know he's going around the country trying to build up support.
I think they're beginning to embrace it. I think the people that are not embracing it are trying to define what infrastructure is. And again, you know, I think when you talk to most people about infrastructure, they think roads and bridges. Infrastructure is not just roads and bridges. It's roads, it's bridges, it's schools, it's hospitals, it's facilities. It's money for pre-K. It's money for health care. It's money for child care. Because if a family of four has two kids and the mother or father, you know, can't afford child care for one of the children or both of the children, has to stay home to take care of the kids, then that's affecting our economy. And that is our infrastructure. That's our system of organization that needs to be addressed. You know, we hear employers all the time talk about that there's not enough people available in the workplace. Well, the way to get more people available in the workplace is to address the issue with child care to make it more affordable so families do feel safe and secure putting their kids in the child care that they need so that way they can go out and they can work and be productive members of society. So, you know, when I talk to people, there's a lot of people, obviously, on the left and on the Democratic side that are 100% behind what he's trying to do. You have some people on the right, on the Republican side, a little bit more conservative, that think, okay, roads, bridges, great, but let's stop there. And, I mean, if the pandemic, I just said this to somebody on city council 2 days ago, if the pandemic has taught us anything, is that, one, we need to invest more in our infrastructure so that way when this happens again, because it will happen again, we have to have the hospitals, research facilities, manufacturing plants to make the things that we need and also to employ the people in these research facilities to come up with the vaccines and the stuff that we need to combat this. But also, we need to think about child care and health care because the pandemic has exposed incredible weaknesses in both those issues in America, which is one of the most industrialized countries in the world that has one of the worst preventative care systems when it comes to health care.
Well said, my man. All right, I got to take a break. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line, columbusconstruction.org. We have a lot more to talk about. We're going to get into fair contracting and a big, big development there, $200 million. Buddy Malone will be joining us later in the show, and he heads the Parkersburg Marietta Building and Construction Trades Council. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget, you can check us out on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis. And eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. And this is my five-star guest. I always love talking about construction and what's going on in Central Ohio. And there's a lot going on. And it's Dorsey Hager. He's in the middle of it all. He heads the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You wanted to talk about fair contracting. I guess the best way to talk about it, let's why don't you explain what fair contracting is. I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't understand what it is. And I know you want to strengthen it. So what's the story on this, Dorsey?
So we've talked about prevailing wage, and everybody knows about prevailing wage. And prevailing wage is great, but sometimes prevailing wage isn't enough. And a lot of companies, a lot of municipalities have adopted fair contracting standards. There's no better set of fair contracting standards than what Franklin County has. It provides that contractors not only have to have the lowest bid, but they have to have the best bid. And they have to provide some basic human dignity to their workforce, and that is, you know, workforce development, apprenticeship training, but also health care and pension, because their idea is if we're going to spend this money to build things here in Franklin County, you know, obviously we want the people that we employ building it to have some of the basic protections that every worker should have, especially if we're using the taxpayers' dollars to do it. Now, the city adopted a fair contracting policy about 12 years ago. It's been okay. There's been some issues here and there. Nowhere near as strong as the county policy. And the Columbus City School Board has no fair contracting policy at all. So what we see on Columbus City Schools is not only do we see workers that don't live in the city or the county or the area, we see workers that don't even live in the state being employed by contractors that don't live in the state as far away as Texas, Tennessee, North Carolina. Now, if you think about that, if you're a school and you're sending your child to that school, you know, we've talked about this before. You want that electrician, you want that plumber, you want that insulator that's working in that school to be a member of your neighborhood, to be a member of your city, you know, somebody that coaches your kid's soccer team, somebody you see at church on Sunday mornings. You don't want somebody that's coming in 3 or 4 days a week doing work and then going back to another state, going back home and taking those tax dollars with them. So it's like I said to somebody on the school board the other day, you know, their job is to educate children. And they don't even have anything in their contracting awards that guarantee that the contractors they hire are educating through apprenticeship training their employees to make sure they're the safest and most well-trained and efficient employees that they can offer. So, you know, that's like me going out and wanting to build an ice cream factory and only hiring people that don't eat ice cream. Why would I do that? That's not very smart for my business, right? So we're having these conversations. We're having these conversations, and I'll try to stop with the food analogies, but I don't know why I'm thinking ice cream today already. But we try to have these conversations with Clemson schools. We try to have these conversations with the city. And if they can come to some sort of fair contracting, again, that mirrors the counties that has been tried, tested, and trued in front of the Ohio Supreme Court, that provides apprenticeship training, health care, and pension, then it raises the bar for everybody and makes everybody, you know, a lowest and best and a reputable contractor. You know, and I think that there's issues here within the city of Columbus right now, especially comes to diversity and especially comes to minority and disadvantaged contractors, where, yes, we want more minority contractors. We want disadvantaged contractors to get into that pool to try to build their business. But let's not lower the standards for everybody to help a few. Let's raise the standards for everybody, and then let's figure out what we can do to some of those who are trying to get into the game to help them get into the game. You know, we had a situation a couple weeks ago, and it's still developing, so I don't want to get into it too much today. I can update you later. But our Building Futures program is a perfect example. We had an open shop minority electrical contractor get some work on the Columbus Crew Stadium, which we've talked about. They were starting to do the work. Obviously, there's a huge need for people here in Columbus, Central Ohio. So this female-owned, African-American owned contractor went to the IBW, talked to a couple of the reps, Dustin Gockenboff and Chris Poff, and said, hey, I need access to manpower. What can I do here? And they said, well, why don't you sign a job agreement with us, with this Columbus Crew Stadium? Let us show you what we can do, help you out, and then we'll go from there. She did. We had immediate conversations with them and Kelly Harrop, our communications and outreach specialist, Leland Bass, our program manager of Building Futures. We went right to the class. You know that we're reaching out to economically disadvantaged females and people of color. We had five kids that have identified as electricians. We took two right off the bat, and they went to work 2 weeks ago right at Crew Stadium, helping this contractor, you know, achieve their goals of diversity and inclusion that we're working so hard with them to achieve. And that's what we need to do. That's what we need to do to help some of these disadvantaged contractors. We, you know, again, we need to raise the bar for everybody so that way the workers aren't disenfranchised. We don't need to lower it, just give opportunities to a few that may not be passed on to their employees.
Yeah. Great story there, Dorsey. I'm glad you share that. That's a good example of doing the right thing, doing the outreach, and it obviously worked for you as well as everybody involved. So more of that needs to happen, no doubt. No doubt. Let's move on to this development. Now, Whitehall, isn't that a suburb of Columbus or a certain district? What's the story on that and what's going on there?
Whitehall is a district just east of Columbus. It had its heyday in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, like some suburbs close to the city. It's had some issues with crime and violence, but it's rebounding and it's coming back. A lot of it's due to the leadership of Mayor Kim Maggart, whose son is actually an IBEW member, and also their city attorney, Michael Bivens, close personal friend of mine. His wife and I work very close in the Building Futures program. She's an employee of the county and does great work in helping us with Building Futures. But City Attorney Bivens and Mayor Maggart have done a lot to try to attract business and grow the city of Whitehall and increase opportunities for their members. One of the things that they're doing through economic development is they have a huge development going on out there. It's about $100 million. It's going to be some mixed-use, residential, commercial. We're got a seat at the table with our development director, talking to them about what we can do to not only get our contractors on the job, but also what we can do outreach in the city of Whitehall and in that community to get some of those kids into our programs so that way they can also maybe work on projects like that or similar projects within the county. The city of Reynoldsburg, who just had a big, big 2 years ago shakeup. They have a Democratic mayor now and Joe Begany, great union guy, former Columbus City school teacher. So he gets union issues and building trades issues. He's been a friend of mine for about 10 years. And then City Attorney Chris Shook, who, again, another guy that just gets it. He was elected as well. He came out of Zach Klein's office in the city of Columbus. But just two ultra-great, progressive, pro-union young Democrats that get it and understand what they need to do to help their city. And they have a development out there, too, that's about a $200 million development. So I've got a meeting with their economic development director, again, to talk to them to see what we can do about getting our contractors on those projects, but also providing local jobs for people there in the city of Reynoldsburg so that they can work right there and get on that direct path to the middle class.
Are you going to ever stop growing down there? Every time I talk to you, I mean, there's something new popping up in Central Ohio.
No, and you're absolutely right. And I brought my wife down a couple nights ago for a dinner. We had dinner with a couple of great state legislators here, Kristen Boggs and Bridget Kelly. And my wife is a huge friend, great fan, and a friend of Kristen Boggs. So she wanted to come down. So I brought her down for dinner, and we were driving down in Columbus, the Short North campus area, to get to where we were meeting. She was like, "Oh my gosh!" And I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "It's like this, like." I want to say maybe daily, where you just see a crane pop up or a hole. And, you know, I had a great breakfast the other day with Brian Mooney from Turner and talked about the construction that's going on here in the city of Columbus. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the Hilton Hotel. The crane just went up higher on the Hilton Hotel, so they're getting ready to do the next pour on the next 9 floors at the Hilton Hotel, which will bring that up to 16 stories. It tops out at 26. But when they get to 16, you'll be able to see it from around the outer belt, and the skyline in Columbus will, again, drastically change. So it's exciting. It's great times to be down here. You know, we're not naive. We know it's not going to be like this forever, but boy, while it's here, we're going to ride the wave, and we're going to keep doing what we're doing to get people into the workforce.
There you go. All right, one more issue here. We have the retirement of a relatively popular congressman by the name of Steve Stivers. It's got a lot of play in all parts of Ohio. What's the story on this guy, and what do you see happening?
Very popular. So I've known the congressman for about 10 years. We first met back when he was in the House and the Senate, worked his way through the State House. He was a guy that we always didn't agree 100%, but we agreed a lot. And when we disagreed, he gave you his reasoning, and he told you why. And, you know, we constantly had conversations. The big issues that, you know, we talk about on your show, prevailing wage, right to work. He was with us on prevailing wage. He was with us. He was against right to work. The only big issue that maybe he wasn't 100% with us was on project labor agreements, public sector project labor agreements. But we always had conversation about that and proselytization. I tried to get him there. But he was good. He was always a good vote for us on Davis-Bacon when he was in the U.S. Congress. He has job fairs here in his district a lot. He always invited me to participate in his job fair, was always proud and grateful what we're doing. And he's the brother-in-law of a union iron worker. His brother-in-law is a union iron worker in Cincinnati, so he got the importance of the building trades. Well, he decided to step down. He spent a lot of time in Congress. You know, I'm sure this year had been challenging because he was no longer in the majority. So he got a job in the public sector, or in the private sector here in Ohio. He's decided to retire. There's going to be a special primary on August 3rd, and then the election to fill his seat will be this year on the regular election day on November 2nd. And, you know, opportunities like this don't come up a lot, especially when somebody as popular as Congressman Stivers in the district that he's in. So we have two Democrats, actually three, that have expressed interest. I've talked to Allison Russo. She's definitely in. She's a member of the State House. And I've talked to Michael Stenziano, who right now is county auditor. He's exploring it. And I talked to Adam Miller, who's a state rep, and he's exploring it. That's on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, a lot of friends of the building trades are looking at it. Bob Peterson, Jeff Luray, Brian Stewart, Stephanie Kunze, who's incredible, just a rock star here on the west side of Franklin County. She has announced that she's going to run. I think Jimmy Hughes is maybe thinking about it. So a lot of building trades friends on the Republican side, a lot of friends on the Democratic side as well. So it's an interesting district right now. Before it gets drawn, it's about a plus 12 RPI, even though it has the western part of Franklin County, has a lot of rural area to it, too, that's very red, obviously. So every one of them that's talked to me, it's like I told them, you know, I don't I don't anticipate the Columbus Building Trades is going to actively come out and support, endorse, or get involved with one single candidate because we have so many friends in it. You know, me personally, I'm going to sit there on the sidelines and I'm going to have my popcorn, and I think it's going to be an interesting couple of months. So
you could throw ice cream in there too. All right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very, it's going to be very entertaining, but you know, there's a lot of talent that are going after that seat. There's, you know, the only person I've heard interested that is not a pro building trades person. Are you ready? Ron Hood.
Oh, no.
Who is term limited and constantly write the work, do away with prevailing wage. Ron Hood. So.
All right. Let's hope that doesn't happen. You take care. Dorsey Hager heads the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, columbusconstruction.org, like I indicated. Lots going on. You could check out more on that website. You could follow him on Twitter, BuildCentralOH. You take care. Stay safe. We'll talk to you in June, all right?
Will do. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. I hope your Indians keep playing well. And we're going to have a lot to talk about next month. We'll talk about work. We'll talk about the growth of Columbus. Hopefully we'll be talking about Brown's mini camp, and we'll go from there. So, all right?
Very good.